Yeah, as soon as she's ready.
This is the meeting of the Recovery Plan Review Committee. Today is September the 24th, Thursday, 2014. Time is now 2:10.
Recovery Plan Review Committee will be called to order. It's now 2:12. In attendance is Commissioner Richard Richardson and Commissioner Gary Smith. LA staff is Benjamin Stevenson, Carlos Pizarro, and Valerie Brown, and Brenda Goodman. First thing on the agenda is to approve the meeting minutes. We'll take a minute to review them.
Do you know if anybody in Section 8 drives a silver Toyota?
After reviewing the minutes for Tuesday, August 26th meeting, there are no errors or omissions, and we'll receive the minutes as published. Now we'll go into old business, the recovery plan update. I'm going to turn it over to the executive director.
Excuse me. Either one of you drive a Toyota Silver?
Me.
Okay, I need you to move the car because the movers got to stay. Say, I'm sorry.
You want Patrick to move it?
Yeah, let
Patrick move.
Thank you.
Yeah, based on where we are, HUD is going to come here, the attendance getting on the 30th, Tuesday next week, and we will present this draft plan to them. And as I said in the email, this is a work in progress. And we have the format that we got from our current consultant. And basically just plugging in the information. And we'll just walk through that so you guys have an idea of what's in there and also where we are. And basically, the plan is to basically present this to HUD as a draft. And that we want to send them in advance and where could it come here. And then we'll do the presentation at a particular time. Let them take it with them and review it, give us some feedback. And if they give us some immediate feedback, we'll make those revisions and then email the update to them, and then once we receive their comments, then we'll come back to this committee and then to the board. And right now, we're going to be sometime in October, but that's predicated upon HUD. But as you know, we've written that plan, don't have it done at the end of August, but HUD was saying, okay, you can wait because we were going to go down there, but then they said, no, we'll come here at the label. So that's why.
That's easier on our budget.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's right.
And it gave us a little more time to put it together. And where we are, the numbers, are going to change. And one of the things, just see if I can put a summary overview. The first thing is, that the balance is actually 5.262 as opposed to 4.99, which we've been discussing. Mm-hmm. And that was because the 4.9 was an unaudited financial. And this is based upon the audited financial. And this is what that's going to be reported in the LCM for 2013.
I know.
Okay. And, but all the progress that we've been telling that we've been making, that has been occurring, it just won't be reflected in the LCM until 2014. And you'll see some of that when you look at the repayment plan. But there were some payments that did not post until 2014. Okay. And we are anticipating that say, by the end of 2014, that debt should be reduced by close to $800 to $1 million. And so what that means is that we have been plugging holes and no longer doing a lot that are getting done in the past that was causing the debt to grow. It's not being reduced. And that's the most important thing that we're focused on. We're going to focus on not doing $300 million. And we'll be able to show that. And so that's what this recovery plan does. And we do that by first by giving a little background, because this plan here, where it's written, and because you see there's a lot of information in here, that's because it's not going to only be reviewed by Miami, it's also going to be reviewed by D.C. And this plan had to speak for us because we want to be able to earn it. And so that's what we did, some of the background information that shows how we got here. Okay. And you'll see, like, and also tell them a little bit about the authority itself, like our size and the like. And that's where, like, I gotta put in page numbers here. So after the cover letter, the first page, the introduction overview, and then with the background information, again, that talks about 189 public housing units, 183 tax rate essentially, multifamily, and then another 1,500,000, which we're eligible for. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, the issue about a little more than like a little over 12, a little less than 1,300. Okay. And part of that has to do with the fact that when you, because what's unusual about here in Lakeland, or unique, somewhat unique to Lakeland, is that you can rent a two-bedroom apartment with a one-bedroom voucher. And so even though you have, say, the 1,500 vouchers, there's a cap on the number of bedrooms. And so that's why you'll issue less vouchers than you actually allocate when you allow a person to rent, say, two bedrooms with a one-bedroom voucher, because that's the consequence of a four-bedroom cap.
And that's allowed? That's allowed here in Lakeland?
Yes. It's not all over the country. You just see it more here in Lakeland than you see it in some other places. Because they can do that, but they have, the rent has to fall within the other guidelines for ground rent.
Okay.
So, and fortunately here in Polk County, the rent is cheap enough where a person can rent
a two-bedroom can rent for a one-bedroom. Right. Fall within the guidelines.
And then the next section, I can talk about the financial condition. And that's where we go through some of the history, to talk about how we got here. And then you look at the table, show the trend. Now, this was done by the financial advisor, where they went all the way back to 2008 and looked at a lot of the financial like the wages, salary and wages, the entrepreneur position, and the like. And that shows just a little bit about how we got there. And then when you see that the revised, when it went from, went to the CSEC model, that caused 2.8 million people, I think, or 2 million to go on the books. And we've been through, you know, like how that occurred in our life, but I think just put it in here. And then the current, and then we talk about what we're doing to address it. That is the current recovery efforts.
Where are we now?
On the bottom of the page,
6.
Yeah. And again, I apologize for not putting up. I meant to go back in and put those in. Okay, you see the chart that says trend analysis?
Yes.
Okay. At the bottom there is current recovery efforts. And then you flip over to the next page there.
Okay.
That's where you go into what the housing authority has done. And you'll see forming this recovery plan review committee. That shows HUD that the housing authority, not just staff, but also the board, takes this matter very seriously. They're going to be looking closely at the financials. And then also then with the reduction in staff. And again, I'll show some of the past history, what we've done in terms of what we've taken with to reduce the size of the number of employees, and then how we see budget expenses for staffing, how that went down. And you'll see that in 2015, we are projecting around 2.1 million. For staff, which is a significant drop in the annual payroll. And also, as you know, some of the previous things with the reduction in the large contract for consulting, all that, we accomplished, we're looking to keep doing that. And then in terms of the next phase, bringing HR in-house, IT sponsors, some of those things. And then the next few pages, a couple pages talk about the government visit and reduction in force. Okay. And where we are with that is that we've met with staff and we've offered packages to 7 employees. Okay. And they have 45 days to consider whether or not they'll take the package.
So it ends up with 7?
For right now, the first phase, yes. Because we may look at making 1 or 2 additional cuts without missing an
opportunity. You had in here.
Sorry?
You had a range in here of what, 7 to 11?
7 to 10.
7 to 10. Yeah.
Well, one already left, so.
No, in terms of offering the packages.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And that just shows some of the details about it. And if they look at the targeted positions and the like. And I put all this in to basically show the analysis that we went through. And because this is some of the information that I submitted to the Labor Council. And because back when we gave the packages to the employees, the document that they have to sign, the attachment to the list of positions that were considered, and then those that were actually selected to be a part to receive the package. So that protects us against age, race, sex, all of those types of lawsuits. Should someone decide that they would do a lawsuit, because this just shows that we went through a thorough analysis and that it's all financial related. And we want to necessarily pick on one person because they were old or because they were female or because they were gay or whatever. Okay. And basically we call it an early exit incentive package. And they have until November 1. Okay. And then with the COCC, we're looking at what we wanted the budget to be. And the target was 456, but when we did the cuts and then we redid the budget and everything, and Paul will walk through that a little later, it'll show you that COCC around 700,000. And that's because we had to do the reorganization, which is this chart here, and I gotta put an exhibit number on it as well. And we're basically dividing them into 2 departments. With 2 VPs. And again, working closely with the HUD consultant, making sure that we're doing things that we think HUD will accept in terms of the organization. And all of that will help us to stay within our projected budget. Okay. And then the next part is the repayment plan.
Yeah, okay. I
was just
running about two sheets. Go ahead.
Yeah, okay. And with the repayment plan, we're basically going to be asking her for 10 years to pay it back. And if you look at this, the repayment schedule, which is a large spreadsheet here. Mm-hmm. Okay. And that's broken out over the 10-year period, shows what amount we'll be paying each year, okay? And you see, in 2014, some of the numbers are real, and some we don't know yet. We don't know within the next 30 days or so. For example, the capital fund reimbursement, that number is being confirmed by the financial advisor. And also the good faith payment, that's a placeholder. Because HUD wants to pay a certain amount, the auditor wants us to pay a certain amount, but we haven't decided exactly what that dollar amount would be. And we won't make that determination until after we file the actual LPS on September 30th. And so that's one of the numbers that have changed. And then with the ACB program, as you can see, that's a correction from 2012 transfer. That's something that was on the books where something should have been charged and given credit, but we're not. And we're going to play dice head to prove that we think they will. And then you see the sales of the proposed sale of the properties. And right now, we're cautiously optimistic that both sales will go through because of the activities that we're seeing, the due diligence that the each developer partner is going through. With the Auburn Manor, they were asking if they could put an access road on our property because they're getting ready to start construction on some of their units. And so that's a very good sign for us. And they're going to do that at their expense. So even if the deal falls through with them, we have an access road should we decide to be on. Okay. And one thing I want to point out to you all, which I'm not just going to point out to HUD, is that when you look at the price there for Auburn Manor, you see it's $1.5 million. As you know, the sale price is $1.89 million. That means that we want to use some of that for our fixed income or to help up with some other area. Exactly. And then you see the uncollected public housing fees and for 2015. We're basically going to submit, and that's detailed in Exhibit B, which is this spreadsheet here. Okay. This is a list by year, some fees that we could have charged to the authority that we did not for public housing. You remember, yeah, Exhibit B, right here on this. Okay. Yeah. Okay. You remember that when the financial advisor did their initial report, they said there was like $1.3 million in uncollected fees, some on the Section 8 side, some on the public housing side. We decided that at this time we'll only ask for the public housing because we don't want to ask for the Section 8 because that would cause us like going to red. And we don't know what amount HUD will approve. Pretty confident about, say, going back, say, 2012, 2011, but would it have gone back to 2008? We don't know. But we're going to submit the request anyway and let them say no, it's what we're saying no. Okay. And I probably, where this is in the recovery plan, I'm going to make that a separate request, you know, with HUD as well, HUD Miami office. And so but we're going to discuss that with them on the when they come here next week. Because they originally asked for details about the uncollected fees, but they wanted to review it because they're saying they indicated they would be willing to support it, but we give them enough justification. Okay. And so we'll be putting this out and submitting that to them separately, but it'll be a part of the recovery plan.
And this would not be them actually sending us money, it would be a forgiveness type thing?
Yeah, we would create.
Right off.
Right. And even with this repayment, we don't actually pay HUD, we repay public housing. And another thing we have to look at, like say...
But HUD doesn't have to come up with any money on this either.
No.
Their budget's going to be tight too, and if they do this without spending money, that'll be easier to do.
we're hoping. Okay. And also when you look in the plan itself and the narrative, you know, the repayment plan, when you look at the city whole city property and the Seven Harbor Manor, you'll see that I added some language about the GTNA, the Green Physical Needs Assessment. Okay. And
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, and the reason I put that in there is because I feel that that supports our argument that we need to get credit for this because we're going to basically just fund these sales proceeds to help fund future development and also to make some repairs to some of our existing units. Because the Green Physical Needs Assessment, which HUD required us to do, shows that we have like a $20 million unmet need over the next 20 years. Okay. And HUD, we know HUD is not going to be enough funding to do that. And so the other one, our thought is to find ways to maintain that deal as well as develop future units. And so I put that in there so that it would give support to our argument.
Well, that confused me some because I thought it was saying there we needed to use that money to do these improvements, but we're also showing it as and paying down the debt.
We won't fund the improvements totally through this repayment. It'll just help us to address that need. And so that's the point.
Well, we can't use it in two places, though.
Yes, you can. Because basically what you're doing is that you're getting credit for repaying public housing, okay? But the fund that you're repaying the public housing, you're using for development activities. Because when you take public housing funds, you're supposed to use those for the development and maintenance of affordable housing units. Okay, and we're basically just taking, they borrowed money from public housing to say purchase, like the Auburn Manor, but when that fell through and they didn't develop any, well, you still owe us that money, because you developed the new, so you owe us that money. And they're like, okay, we're going to pay that money to public housing, but we're still going to use that public housing money to do public housing development, affordable housing development.
The difference is it'll be restricted.
Exactly.
You're basically going from
an
unrestricted account to a restricted account.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, and what we're asking for, and when I say affordable housing, it was because it will be leveraged for a tax credit application.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, and I was focused on. And the other reason I put it in is because they've asked to, well, why should we let you use this money, these sales proceeds, you know, to find what's there? Because we're repaying the monies, which, you know, you all loaned to the housing authority to do development. When that deal fell through, that debt came on both this field. Other words, we're going to sell this land and then build somewhere else. And so, we're replenishing the public housing account because they used 1.12 million in public housing funds to purchase the property, and we're paying back 1.5.
So I think the important piece is, as Valerie explained, that once you transfer it back, it becomes restricted only for the use for future building.
Right.
Yeah, the public housing.
We have no problem with that.
Yeah.
No, I'm just saying, but I think that's important.
Yeah, for
the mention.
And you see,
they might look at it the same way that that Commissioner looked at it from the beginning.
Right.
You're saying you can't use it. you're double dipping of it. So but that explains it. You know. So I think that's important to make sure if they ask the question, or we should even say.
Because
anytime we're making even payments from Polk County Housing Developer towards what's owed to public housing, even though it's being used to do the rehab that we had to do in this building, this is part of AMP 1.
So that's an allowable restricted use.
Mm. Okay.
But if development had just said, okay, we're going to pay it without actually transferring the funds back to this restricted public housing account, it wouldn't even count towards our due to.
Okay.
It would have been a gift, a transfer.
And if you have noted...
The paper trail is correct.
Yeah.
And if you have noted the last sentence in each section, you know, when they, like they sell the whole city property, again, the sale proceeds will be used for the rehabilitation of housing units located on the whole six side for those. And then with Alba Manor, we'll have to utilize the sale proceeds earned from this property for the redevelopment and rehabilitation of affordable housing units at LHA properties. Okay. So again, it's going to be applied towards affordable housing development.
Throughout here, some places we're using HACL and some places we're using LHA. Is there a reason for that, or can we be consistent and use the same thing throughout?
Because we could not find that we could need to have a search and replace function in Microsoft Word.
Okay.
So we had to do it by eye.
Okay.
So if you saw some.
Oh, yeah, there's some in there.
Okay. I tried to catch them all, but I guess I missed some.
Well, in that one, that last sentence, you got LHA properties.
Yep, that's one right there. Okay.
And several places.
Okay, I'll go back to it.
Okay. We just need to be consistent.
I understand. Yeah. But that was the goal, to make it use the proper name, household and city name.
Okay.
And the other thing too, and I may combine these two through the developer fees and non-federal income, because the MIGAR is going to want to see us paying something with the non-federal funds, and developer fees are non-federal funds and stuff. So I'll probably just combine those two and make it future developer, non-federal income and future developer fees, as opposed to, you know, separating the two. Because again, and I hope I put that note in here. Yeah. See, if you see the dollar amount, I need to make sure I get my asterisk correct.
Yeah, okay. Your asterisk just being cleaned up down there. But
thank you, sir. Very good. Basically, the amount will be, I shouldn't say maybe, will be adjusted annually depending upon the amount of non-federal income generated by the housing authority. And that's either through fund profits earned through property management as well as developer fees. Okay? Because basically, HUD wants us to also operate the agency efficiently. So, which I think we're on our way towards doing. And again, it goes over 10 years, and then you're asking, like, say, what if one of the sales fall through? I think, I put in there that, we'll revisit this, that they should one of the sales fall through, and we'll discuss it with the man office what other options we can have. And one of which is not a part of this plan is that, say, with the Dakota property, we're coming at the end of the tax credit period. Should we buy back that property and convert all those units to public housing or part of the RAD, that we get credit for that? And just some other ways, you know, sort of creative ways as we go along. Okay. And that's just one. Because we anticipate that probably was, you know, $3, $4 million. But that'll go along with it, we'll pay off the debt as well. So. And one of the things I've been stressing, you know, is that HUD's got to be open to creative ways to repay this debt, because this housing authority is not large enough to repay the debt out of the income from the property. You don't have enough property to do that. And so that's why you see these other creative items in here. And which I think they will be open to that, but we just have to give them something that they can stand on. And I think we've done that for what we are presenting here.
Okay. So we're really betting that we'll sell this property. If either one of those fall through, we could be looking at a whole different scenario.
Right, and that's the plan B, is to buy back the Dakota property. Because when we get to the end of the tax credit period, the investors and your partner, they want to get out because they no longer benefit from the having the tax credit attached to the property. And so that's why you have that clause where the first option to, when they sell the property, the first option is that for the housing authority.
Well, I think there's another question that could be asked. Okay. If the sale of those two properties, mm-hmm. if it comes down to the fact that it's a question of dollar amount, mm-hmm. how much to sell it, how much are we willing to drop in order to get rid of it?
I think we've already at that point because
that's our lowest that we're willing to go.
Well, because we actually have a contract for that amount. So, so they're going to do the due diligence, and either they're not going to buy it and walk away, or they're going to go ahead and purchase it. Yeah. But they had to settle the price up front. The only thing that could change is you would go through SAC's office, the Special Application Center for the disposition, and they say, okay, we see there's differences in your appraisal versus theirs. How did you get to this number? And if HUD doesn't think you're getting enough for it, we'll say they could actually call in a third appraisal to say, oh, you should get more. But if they take that risk and do that, if that appraiser comes in lower, so I doubt that they would do that.
And also, too, the thing to consider, too, is that with the whole six site, we didn't pay anything for it. So this is all profit here at 1.3. And then it's been on the market for at least 5 years, trying to sell it. And then with Arbor Manor, we paid $1.2 million for it. And so for what it previously had, during the heyday of the housing market, we had a $3.1 million offer for it, but that fell through for various reasons. And so, and we also have
Can we go lower on this particular contract, or if this one falls through, will we go lower on the next contract?
If they back out and say no, we don't want to do it, and we put it back out again, mm-hmm. and they come back and now with a lower price.
Yeah, we will probably end up having it too, because if you look at the commercial corner, that second offer that we went into a contract was slightly lower, and I'm sure it's because we're in the sunshine and they realized, the person who offered a couple hundred thousand dollars more.
Yeah. But out. Also, too, we've gotten at least a couple other inquiries about the whole six property, but we had to tell them that we currently have
an agreement.
Yes, and I'm not talking about Ray Lewis.
I only said that because my agency right now is going through making a bid on the property. And we made a bid, and we had a partner.
Okay.
And when they did the due diligence, the partner said, "I don't think I can deal with that." So he pulled out, and we're left with the whole note. But due diligence, for some simple reason they forgot to put in the charges. We had to put in a new elevator, mm-hmm. and we didn't take that into consideration when we made the offer. So
I tell you, Robinson, one of the reasons that $3.1 million deal fell through was because the potential buyer, felt that they were doing some misrepresentations. about having infrastructure put in.
Right, that's
but we've been up front.
So you feel pretty comfortable?
Because as a matter of fact, we to get up to the 1.9 and all the manner, because you may recall their initial offer was turned down.
Right.
And then they came back and we met halfway.
Okay.
You know, to between our appraisal and their appraisal.
Yeah.
And should SAC raise the question about, well, are you sure you get maximum value? Mm-hmm. We'll say we only paid 1.12 for it.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So,
and I think we would have to point out to them, too, if they pulled in a third appraisal, you're opening the door if that third appraisal says lower. You know, you got to go with the lower price.
Depending on what day of the week it is.
and I don't think that HUD is going to want to kill that. Deals were killed.
Yeah.
You know, but they understand that money is tax, not just this house, but all housing authorities.
Right. Right.
And they don't want to get left that they have to kill the deal.
Yeah.
So I think they'll be reasonable.
Okay.
Yeah. You would think so.
And then the other part of that spreadsheet, you'll see, it's like page two of it.
Yeah.
You'll see the different aspects of the recovery. It shows, like, say, governance, administration, finance. Mm-hmm. We talk about discuss the task, desired outcome, target dates, then the actual, because that's the comments of any responsible party. Okay. And what is it called?
Well, he saw the email you had from VMS. And he went, stepped out to address it.
Any other?
But just one general question.
Sure.
As I was reading through when you sent this to us, that we're moving some of the reduction in staff is that, or some of the reduction in the COC is because we're moving some staff from COC to public housing and things like that.
Right.
How is that transfer impacting the budget of where we're moving them to?
That
we're relieving one budget, but we're impacting another.
That's one of the things that comes through the walking through.
Oh, that's good. That's important.
Yeah, because that's one we kept all that in mind when we achieved the balanced budget, because we looked at each department and, like, what they management. Right. And
who can absorb it best?
Exactly.
Okay. I just didn't want to rearrange.
Yeah. Also, the
deck chairs on the Titanic.
the numbers that you have down, the human resources, the savings from going from ADP administration, unemployment, working
right,
comp,
right,
so
right.
forth. Are we real comfortable with those numbers? Those are real numbers.
Yeah, because those numbers are taken from actual contract.
Right.
Okay, but we're still going to, I mean, that's what they were, but we're still going to pay workers' comp, we're still going to pay unemployment and so forth.
Right, but we were doing that anyway, but they were doing a contract to do that, and that's the contract for the services. So that's in addition to what you're asking about, those expenses there. And when we eliminate those expenses by having an in-house person handle it, and then we did bring in another consultant, Paychecks, to help with the payroll and the like. But still do it at a lower rate.
We're going to actually realize a savings of $175,000 a year.
Yeah.
It could be. Well,
in the
shifting of personnel
mm-hmm.
for unemployment, we reclassify them every year. We review the classifications every year to make sure that, you know, people that were in a higher bracket, if we move them to a job that's in a lower bracket, that we take advantage of that. Follow what Gary was just saying about the real issue, and I'm not sure what page you're on. Let me get it.
Be
it on the same page.
Yeah, I think I put in the page numbers.
Really, human resources function in house.
When he was talking about the is that number real? And he went over the different classifications.
You're talking about the unemployment savings?
Yeah, you're
right. That is reviewed each year.
Because we're going to make a classification change depending on what the person's doing. If we reduce some of the I think some of the reduction was actually in Section 8, some of the workmen, maintenance people. But if we shifted somebody else over and from another group into the reclassification would change depending on what their new job is.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, I'm a maintenance tech.
Yeah.
Then yeah, I have
reduce,
more.
Right, if we reduce maintenance, that reduces your
the financial background.
Okay, I understand.
He brought that real close.
But that's a good question because they're going to ask you that question.
Right.
You know, is that 175 real?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it
is real for 2014.
Because they got $65,000, he's saying we're going to save in workman's comp, and that's a big number.
Again.
How much is our total workman's comp?
It's real for 2014. Okay. And color clear, it won't be real, say, in 2015 because you won't be paying that same expense.
Right. Okay.
Okay, that's just on 2014.
Yeah.
Right. So this is 2014. Okay.
Yeah, because we won't be paying a $90,000 to ADP.
That's right.
In 2014.
Okay. Well, the $90,000, I didn't have any problem with that. I figured that was real. The other parts were the thing I wondered about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because
okay.
Got those directly from HR.
Okay. So what's the timetable to get all that in place?
That,
if we're talking about the savings.
That started January 1st of 2014.
Yeah, but we've been talking about bringing the in-house.
Yeah.
Have we done it?
Yeah.
Are we totally in-house now on payroll and everything?
Yeah, as of January 1.
So ADP is gone?
Yes.
Completely?
Yes.
Okay.
At the end of 2013, they were gone.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Should I take that out? Is that too
No.
Okay. So the reason I had that in there, like that's just for finding the historical perspective of what we've done to cut costs.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's why I was there. And the reason I say the projected annual savings is because if we had not done this is what we were paying every year.
Okay. And we also say that we're saving $12,000 by moving the public housing manager from John Wright into this building.
Uh-huh.
How are we saving $12,000 doing that?
That's the admin cost and
utilities. Now we're having to, or we have the ability to share different expenses: gas, electricity, water, space. Cleaning supplies all together.
Yeah, so basically those expenses were being paid to the properties. They're now being paid to the housing authority. Okay, because when that person was at the property,
okay
you had to pay, it stayed at the property, but now since they're over here, it can be applied to the other tenant.
Okay. Yeah, I think we really want to be able to, because they're gonna zero in right in on this where your projected savings are.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't want to be stumbling when we're answering the question.
That's right.
Quick sharp answer, bing bing bing, and then but at least I say, oh well, well.
And that when they say, well, we want to double check your number, we want to make sure we've already double checked,
right? We have backup for all of that. That's fine.
Okay. All right.
Something else I had. Let me find where it was here.
I think that just in general.
Okay, now, if we move that public housing manager into this building, then
he is moving right now.
No.
Yeah, everybody's moving.
No,
so.
No.
Who's that?
No.
Because it says the relocation should be complete by the first quarter of 2014.
Yes, that was done. Vanessa has had all the space over here since the first quarter of 2014.
No, I know, but the older... Okay.
That's Section 8. That's different.
Okay. Yeah, that's two different things. Yeah. Section 8 one says by... We don't say on that. We don't say when that's going to be completed by.
Right. even though we said it was
so we're going to save $25,000 in 2014.
Right, and that's going to, because that's when we anticipate them moving in June.
Yeah.
But since they've...
it's going to be less than $25,000.
Right, probably half of that. So it took an extra 2 or 3 months. So, yeah. But going forward, it's a $45,000 annual
savings. Yeah, starting in 2015. Right. Part of that in this year, but $45,000 this year.
Exactly.
Okay. We might want to clarify that.
I think I had that in the narrative. I'll just make sure that it's still in there.
Okay.
I think just in general, I think the format of the report is good. I think it's pretty, walks you through it step by step. I think it's the presentation is good.
Yeah.
I just hope the content is equally as good.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you're in it.
And that they're in a mood to receive it.
Right.
I think they will be because the HUD consultant, who basically gave me this template,
She's
very well respected, and she'll be there for the presentation as well. And again, because the person in charge,
it's a new person,
who is he really does not want to see this household go into trouble or anything like that, and so I think he's really going to work with us and be able to.
He's not the acting.
No, he is the actual one.
Right.
Yeah. And he has, but we have to give them something that they can stand on.
Okay.
And that is what the committee was. And that's why you see a lot of detail. Because I'm trying to answer, anticipate questions that they were asked and included in this particular narrative. Okay.
I'm always. I guess playing the devil's advocate here.
Sure.
You know, what happens if they don't accept it? Where are we at?
We would have to see what brings them heartburn and what they want us to change.
Okay.
And then we would have to revise that. And because
certain portions of it will stand for sure.
I'm sorry.
Certain portions of it are going to stand, but other portions they may disallow.
Yeah, because see, bottom line is this, you know. They would like for us to, like, say, pay for this. We're using non-federal funds, totally.
Right.
But the reality of the situation is that we can't do that.
Yeah.
Even if these problems are operating at 1% efficiency, we cannot do that because the hospital is just not large enough. That's the reality of the situation that HUD has to accept, and we've accepted HUD has to accept. And that is why, like I said, I had to find some creative ways to pay this money back, but also created but legitimate way.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's what you have here. Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
And again, I said plan B. Because the other thing you have to look at too is that the Miami office, they're, and this is, I've got to be looking at this one, not as open to non-public housing and development as, say, the D.C. office, because as you can see, you know, with Congress, with basically assisted budget for her, they've been decreasing public housing funds over the past few years, okay? So they've been funding, say, Section 8 and tax credits, okay? Why? Because you have private sector partners, okay? And that is the way we're, that's why you're seeing her not pushing RAD. They just wait for Congress to fund the money. But the Miami field office, their focus is still on public housing. Well, the horse is already at the barn.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You know. 80% of our inventory is non-public housing. So we can't go back to being 1% public housing. I was going up the bar. And that's one of the realities of this particular situation. And that took all that into consideration when I was putting this, because we got to look at what's best for the long term, for the agent, because it's not the HUD's best interest, it's not our best interest for us to shut it up, how to throw it down, or put it in such a position where it cannot operate efficiently. Okay? With the staffing cuts, okay, and the having to present that zero-based budget, you know, it's a very, it puts in a very difficult situation because, you know, for whatever reason, it's out there that grew too much and couldn't afford all that growth. I saw that when I first came here, and that's why you saw me really start reducing expenses as well as staffing levels. I was able to do it through attrition, but I said, well, he's dealing with fast enough.
Yeah.
Okay. And I think we have now, finally, after 2 years, 2.5 years, a very good and knowledgeable staff that's capable of fixing this, having this agency to operate efficiently, not just on the short term, but on the long term.
Okay, my only question was because I'm, you know, coming from a different environment.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen it up in the New England area, at least two or three have gone into receivership.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want you to know how close we were to that.
I don't think we're close at this point, especially since the current director realized that he wanted to be sure, and I'll tell you why. They don't need to board those on their watch.
Yeah.
Not the whole state of Florida need any more households going to the city. Right.
Well, I think knowing the history behind some of the ones that went under, it was because of, you know, funds being misappropriated.
Exactly.
And our audit is clean audit, so that's a good,
right.
That works.
And I think that's another very important factor we have in our favor, is that no money was stolen.
Right. That's the key.
Yeah.
We had a couple of them went to jail, so.
Yeah.
And also by definition.
I probably need to point that out in this report here that nobody was stolen.
But by definition, the funding was used, or whatever we owe public housing, was used for the purpose of affordable housing.
Right, right.
So,
the money was not used where it should be, it stayed within the context of the authority. It didn't go into somebody's pocket.
And also, we had a meeting this week with Karen,
Cato Turner,
and the advisor, and they actually say that about 90% of the agencies are going through the same process.
The budget cuts didn't help.
Right. And also, there was no budget.
Right, that's
sequestration did us in.
It's not designed to be profitable.
Right. No. Yeah, that's right.
You know,
that's right.
Why you get something. I mean, you can't make it profitable.
Yeah, you can't make it.
It's a philosophy which, you know, we understand that we accept, you know, in the public housing world, but the reality is that, you know, that's what causes all, like the 99% of public housing programs in this country. But the key to the window up there between us and some of the other housing authorities is that we now have a capable staff that can evaluate situations, stop things, and, you know, manage them efficiently.
Have we had anybody accept their reduction in force offer the payout?
They've all stretched it out.
Okay.
and it's understandable why they would do that.
Yeah. Unless somebody just tired.
And again, we've got some people here who've been very loyal, very hardworking and stuff. Because, as I said, we've been at a bare bone capacity for a long time. We're not cutting bones.
Okay. Yeah.
And so we have to cut some people who we actually need. But until we can buy this budget and then build it back up, we got to do what we got to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and.
But we got a plan.
This is the latest organizational chart to where we are right now.
Uh-huh. Well, that's what we're projecting here. And this is the one that's tied to the budget.
Right.
That you all see.
Okay.
All
right. These are the actual budgets right here.
Yep.
Yeah, good. haven't had a chance to look.
I haven't had a chance to look at it either.
Really? I just got 5 minutes ago.
they didn't change too much.
We got the two in here that we didn't have before.
No, I need to print that. Sorry.
We got Hampton Hills, COC.
We need development and
Manor. Manor, Bartlett, the Manor.
There was two of them.
You got the Manor?
So you feel
no, they don't have to approve them.
Okay, but under development. In a minute, it's development.
Development. Westlake Real.
Dollar over to the far right.
Yeah.
And that client was in Bradley's, and I thought we took the package. Oh, we did take the package.
Yeah.
I was surprised. This one is Kurt.
Well, I saw that in here, that he was one of the was good.
Yeah, I was wondering where he landed.
Resident services is, as you know, a very important piece.
Yeah.
35 years of experience.
Yeah. Like you say, that's the bone. The bone.
Yeah.
When it's cut, that's the bone.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, hopefully in this printout you can see the number this time.
Yeah.
Yeah, it took me some time, but, you know, I was able to get the numbers bigger.
So is there anything in these that when we go over them that we should be looking for?
The most important items in here, I'm going to go through COCC first because that's the one that HUD and everybody's looking into, you know. So the most important items in here is that we have identified the correct income that we're supposed to be collecting. Also, the maximum income that we can collect within the safe harbor of every program. And also, the income that we can collect from frontline activities, not as a maximum, but as a medium that can be actually spread between the senior management team. And so the first line item is Section A, and that's $17,500 per month, and that's within the safe harbor of how much fees we can get from that program. And the only reason we're going to be able to get that money is because the savings of moving Section A here, and also by contracting out the case management services for that program, which I believe are going also to enhance the services to the participants and the landlords. So we should be able to answer emails within 24 hours and all that good stuff. The second line item is asset management and bookkeeping fees. That's a set of fees that doesn't change, so that's automatic. But in the past, for some reason, they were not collecting that money. So since 2008 to now, we didn't collect any asset management fees. Bookkeeping fees we started last year, but now having a new finance manager, you know, we went through the budget yesterday and he understood that before we pay anything, we have to pay ourselves so we can keep providing services. So the third line item is management fees collected from or received from Westlake Management and Public Housing AMP1. And again, these management fees are within the safe harbor, but also include about $80,000 of frontline money that can be tapped into by senior staff again, by doing frontline activities. And we have to, again, we had a conversation yesterday, we have to be really disciplined on keeping track of what we're doing, keeping track of the money that we need, the payroll, overtime, all these activities, because in 2015, if we get out of line for a second, we're going to be out of budget. So we have to work in unison to be able to for this budget to work, basically.
Yeah. And I think one of the key things that we're going to have now with the new finance person is open lines of communication.
Did you budget anything in there for overtime, or is there any overtime included in the budget?
It's some overtime, but not a lot. 90% of the employees in COCC, their salary anyway. So,
okay. Yeah.
The next line item is for fee for service for the IT and training, and that's basically the computer guy. After meeting with HUD, they basically say, well, the IT, you should have the IT on COCC. However, everything that he does, you should be charging the different departments based on
Yeah.
So that's what we're going to do, including the training. The training is coming from HR to the properties, to the employees, and we can also charge those services. Then the grant salary contribution that you bill, the grant has $12,000 per year to be reimbursed for, in this case, for Valerie's salary, as she's going to be overseeing that program. So, but these are money that in the past were not getting charged to the grant. So it was just, you know, so. Then the capital fund operation, that's, again, money that was there but wasn't being used for the purpose of supplementing the salaries of COCC.
In the grant thing, and, mm-hmm. So that's money that's line item in the locks, and you just have to, when you go and mm-hmm. unlock to get it, you just have to put that line item
exactly.
in.
And that's it. Mm-hmm. It's easy.
It's easy.
Yeah. And I can tell you the practice before was, we had to make payroll, we need $250,000. They were supposed to investigate, are we getting this income, we're getting this, are you drawing down the money from logs? No, just transfer $250,000 from non-federal to, and then I will investigate later. So that after talking to the finance manager, we're no longer going to do that. You know, we're going to investigate, make sure that everything is so.
Yeah, if it's line out of the locks, are you
going to
do that?
Mm-hmm.
Because you've actually got a 112 budget here. It's just allocated across that 112. Mm-hmm. So every month is going to be critical to analyze
exactly.
And see where we are based on what we projected. Mm-hmm. And that's where it's going to show up. So.
And actually, if we have any deviations in income,
right.
We have to look at the expenses and employees, because at any given moment in time within 2015, if we have a shortfall in income, we have to tell somebody, listen, this month we don't need you, I'll call you later, thank you, but we have to keep the company running. So then capital funds operations, that's for operating the modernization of the properties, and that's also money that we get reimbursed for. And then the capital fund allocation, 1410, that's actually a salary-based contribution. So that also going to go to pay for Valerie and Ben, as they're going to share the asset management and the modernization responsibilities. Then we go into the expenses, and for the admin salaries, we have the employees included in the the ED, vice president, Valerie, the finance manager, IT manager, the HR coordinator, the ED secretary. That's your title?
She's not the ED secretary.
Okay. The executive secretary.
Secretary.
I forgot that.
She's shared. Okay. She's mine primarily, but I share.
So those are the positions under the CLCC based on the then everything else is, you know, 401k contribution, medical insurance, et cetera, et cetera. What we were able to do with the expenses is that now the Section 8 public housing is here and Section 8 is here for 2015, all the expenses are going to be here. So under the regulation, in actuality, because the building is belong to public housing, they carry the load of most of the expenses in terms of utilities. However, COCC had to pay their fair share. But their fair share is based on square footage and all different calculations. So the COCC office is actually the smallest space in the building. So App 1 is going to carry most of the load with Section 8.
So you have allocation schedules for all of that?
Mm-hmm. We recreated the allocation schedule because the one that they were using, it was from, I think, 2006. In 2006, they had properties that were public housing. Now they're not public housing, but they were still using the same allocation schedule. Okay. So, yes.
What's our health insurance ratio?
We pay $500 per person.
100%?
No, $500.
Mm-hmm.
For some people, for single, one person, it is actually enough to pay for their insurance. But if you have family, then...
So you pick up the balance. So there's no ratio, it's just a cap.
$500,
yeah.
Some people pay
single,
you know, 70-30, you know, 50-50.
Yeah.
So you cap it at 500.
Yeah.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Because we looked at that. And we saw that they couldn't afford it.
Yeah,
that's a good point.
That's a good cap.
Yeah. And then one line item that is significant is training for commission. So
yeah.
When I went, but however, when I went to the regulation and I saw, because COCC has been paying commissioners training for forever, so. In 2010, when everything changed and we went through asset management system, we were supposed to also change how everything is paid, which didn't happen. The commissioner training is still or was allowed or is allowed to be charged to public housing, not to COCC, because the commissioners, in reality, you represent the public housing and the Section 8 program. So that didn't happen. Now under the new budget, that's budgeted under public housing AMP-1 budget.
So commission training is not in the COCC.
It's not in the COCC.
No, it's in public housing.
Yeah.
Okay. Other than the COCC, I think that's it. Those are the major items. Any questions so far?
No.
Oh, under COCC2, legal expenses. I have reduced the legal expenses to $12,000. I believe that moving forward, we should be prudent on when we call Rick or somebody, because it was kind of out of hand.
It adds up in a hurry.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really? Yes.
Billable hours. You know,
it is.
Sundays and
yeah, on weekends. Yeah. And one of the things that we're probably looking at as the in the future.
I was gonna say Teresa.
She gave it to you. Maybe bringing Rhonda back because she's a lower rate than Rick,
mm-hmm.
or having them participate via Skype. Because
then you save travel.
Exactly. Because
mm-hmm.
I think that's what to do in. Cocoa Beach.
Yes.
Yeah, right. And I think he also does put out in Gainesville as well, a couple of other places where he participates via Skype.
Does he
bill us for the his portal to portal time, or just the time that he's here, and just
I'm sure it's portal to portal.
Yeah, yeah. Not face to face. What he'd like to say in his contract is that they show the cost of travel, but they, you know, waive it.
Yeah,
as I'm sure you know, they make it out somebody waive it.
Right? Oh, yeah.
His hourly rate is more than the travel time.
Yeah. He is. The next budget is the Housing Choice Voucher Section 8 program. And basically, even though we're going to approve the Section 8 budget, we don't know how much money we're going to get next year. We're still waiting on appropriations, and we're still waiting on different factors. Right now, we have about 150 vouchers on the street, so that also will change all the numbers. So at this budget, my recommendation will be to take it home, go through it, but I will be doing a full presentation on the October board meeting, and hopefully by then I will have more concrete numbers.
And I hope y'all caught that, because we originally had planned on doing it the 29th,
right.
But we're not going to do it in October. Are y'all okay with that?
The reason for the shift is what?
We want to present the budget to HUD first.
Oh, I see.
That's part of the
timing-wise,
part of the recovery plan. And we get their feedback on it.
Timing-wise, for the LHA budget, we're good. I don't have to send them to HUD until we send the agency plan. Right. So we're
which is
October 15th.
Right, the 15th. Technically, it depends on how things fall. It will be the 17th, but I always stick to the 15th, the earliest. So the 15th.
And when's our meeting?
Budget has to be approved before December for HUD. For HUD purposes, you're thinking investors
I'm sorry, because I have the other budget that I have to send to the investors by the October 15th.
Yeah.
This budget I can send by November, so yeah.
We were planning to present it at the meeting on the 29th.
Mm-hmm.
Now you want to shift it to
the 20th.
To October.
1 month later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And again, the reason is because I want to see HUD's input.
We're going to present the budget to HUD as part of the recovery.
That makes sense.
The day after our meeting.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes sense.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
We had anticipated, HUD having done their review prior to the board meeting.
Actually,
but when they got back to us,
actually, it's only 2 weeks.
Exactly.
Hmm.
So not earth shattering.
So the next budget is the Hampton Hills, and again, that it's not going to change a lot unless we start selling houses like crazy, which is not going to happen. We already sold one, but...
We need to have a fire sale. Sell them off.
Mm-hmm. So, and it's really basic. We're getting rental income about $5,000 per month, and subsidy about $1,600. Everything else is basic salary and some expenses to keep the houses in good shape. The most important one is the public housing budget, AMP 1. And this one can also change based on appropriations or if they decide to give us more money for subsidy, then that will be good too. Rent average, and you can see the different per month changes in the tenant rent. And what I did for the first 7 months, I used the same variation that we're having in 2013 and 14. And the reason for those variations, because in public housing, people find jobs, they lose jobs, so we had to make changes to their subsidy doesn't change. And the subsidy that I'm using is based on a percentage given by HUD. So out of the 100% that we're supposed to get, we'll only get 79%. So
79.
Mm-hmm. So even though they may tell you at the beginning of the year you're gonna get $1 million, however, every month you're only gonna get 70,000. So they
that's that sequestration and proration.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So it's really for section and public housing. Those are the worst program to plan, because you don't never know.
And HUD, like last year, they told you to plan on getting it at, what, 80 cents on the mm-hmm. dollar, and you end up getting 70 cents on the dollar or something, and you'd already operated 3 months into the year based on what you thought you were going to get, and then you didn't get that.
Yeah. Then you wonder why you got a deficit.
Yeah. You can't plan, because they don't do it up there.
So,
what do we project our occupancy rate?
Public housing is always 97% to 100%. So yeah. Major changes, management fees, again, within the safe haven, training for commissioners. I budgeted $17,500. That came about, I think it was $2,500 per person or $3,000 per person. Let me see. I forgot how much it was.
So how many commissioners have to be certified? How many? I know I got my certification. Did Paul get his certification?
Oh, sure. I'm sure.
How about assessing?
Yeah, I think it's down to Deerfield.
Yeah, because those are the only, really, I think, in a tight budget year that those are the only ones that probably doing
and,
the travel yet. Commissioner Gary,
I said. Yeah, and did you get all yours when you went over to Nauru
and
Tampa?
He did not.
I have the letters.
Haven't told you yet.
You want me to get the letters? I have them.
No,
that's okay. That's okay. No, I was just wondering how good when I'm looking at the expense.
Because remember, Robert even went to Rick. I think I tend to tell you that Michael Gilmore as well.
Yeah. So
there
shouldn't be, the $17,000 should be enough.
Mm-hmm. Then everything else, expenses wise, office expenses and maintenance expenses is based on what we spent 2013, 2014, and also by talking to the managers on what do they think that is going to be or are going to be the major expenses for next year. And also we take into consideration their wishes. Basically, if they want to do this or that, we also budget that in. We add that to the budget. But public housing has a benefit that the other properties don't have. We have capital funds for these properties that is not in here. It's an additional, different budget that Valerie worked on with the agency plan.
You figured in the increase in water utilities and electric utilities?
Mm-hmm, yeah. Actually, after talking to the utility companies, it's going to remain the same, no increase.
That's not what the ledger says.
Oh, well, again,
what they just voted on the budget.
we have a company that they do the studies for us, and that's what they actually certify in a letter, so that there's not going to be any increases, major increases. They may increase 1%, but that's not major. So, and major for public housing is more than 10%. And the good thing about public housing, any increases in utilities, when we're doing the PER calculation to submit to HUD to read for them to redo our subsidy, they take into consideration an increase in utilities, so it's reimbursable.
Yeah, because wastewater fees are going up, solid waste fees are going up, and electric. They're all going up.
So other than that, I don't have anything else. If you have any more questions.
So even though we're showing a loss, but depreciation is not cash. So if you pull that out, you just won't break it even.
Yeah, so at the end, without the depreciation, is cash flowing $14,000.
Yeah, you just won't break it even.
Yeah.
From a cash flow.
Mm-hmm. And also, you know, we're going to have monthly meetings within the staff and the finance manager, the ED, Valerie, and me, and we're going to make sure that we're on track with and that we have milestones to follow and that we don't get out of track.
Yeah, and on the
development.
Yes, I'm going to use the Yardi form that Carlos used, so you'll see all the detail. I know last year when we did the presentation, we had development activities rolled up, but I will make mine match Carlos. It's just a matter of pulling it down.
This is just a snapshot here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But the biggest things that are going to be important in development activities will be at a loss because we have that property at Williamstown that we have to fund with non-federal funds, and we don't get enough income from our association fees, and we don't have any new development fees coming in. We may be collecting fees through the waterfall because the properties are performing, but that's already been reported as income in prior years.
What is Williamstown?
Williamstown is
south
that
of the property south of Sam's, about 3 acres.
Yeah.
Right across from that.
Okay. So we have debt service on that or something?
Yes, we have. We actually have a balloon payment that'll come due in, 2 years now?
Yeah.
So it's like $200,000 left on that loan. So because we have to pay that debt service, we'll end up having to pay it out of cash on hand. But one of the things that we talked about with our new finance manager is that instead of using the cash on hand, we're going to make sure everybody sees it as negative. So when you look at the NOI, instead of it looking like it breaks even, we'll show it as negative, and that'll trigger that we have to pay that for Polk County Housing Developers.
Yeah, and as you all know, we have about 1.5 million that we're fighting, kicking, and screaming to hold on to. And stuff, and we don't want to apply that towards this debt. We'll give up a portion of it if we have to, you know, for the recovery plan, but, you know, we're going to hold on to as much as we possibly can.
Yeah, the other thing that's significant is, of course, there technically really is no development staff because those positions went away, and the one person that left is in COCC. So, but it proves the point that we've always said, once we were approved to do, as an agency, the development activities, you still have costs associated with them. Once you get tax credits, until you get out of the compliance period, there's no way around the fees associated with Secretary of State, any taxes that you got to do, even legal fees associated with running the association. Now, probably what we're looking to do in 2015 is to change the association documents because they're really poorly written. Multiple attorneys have told us that. And it makes it hard to interpret it for the residents when they have questions. I should say homeowners, when they have questions, a member of the association, they come back with a lot of feedback. But to do that, we'd actually have to, in order to incorporate those changes, get every member to vote and come to a meeting to vote. But other than that, I mean, if we can get consensus from the entities and our homeowners that are part of the association that we need to do that. We can clean it up and have a lot less legal costs. A lot of the costs that were associated with the running the Masters Association was due to trying to collect homeowner fees that we just weren't able to collect, and realizing now that if they go into foreclosure, you're only going to get 1% of the loan amount. You don't really need to spend money in legal. So,
the one condo that we still have at Magnolia Point, are we trying to sell that or not?
We would need some to an employee. But you go to good parts of yourself.
And we're actually making more money because the value, I believe, was like $23,000. So a year we're making about $4,500. So, yeah, 30 years we will quadruple that money.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
and, well, I wouldn't mean no more to share.
That's $4,200 rent. That's net after homeowners.
Well, Magnolia is different. That's a different association because we're not, we don't run that association. We're just a homeowner.
No, but I mean, as far as that we're showing the income, $4,200, is that net to us? Or is that?
Well, that's the $4,200 that's actually being paid, and then you have fees associated and the actual expenses. When you see the miscellaneous fees, because what happens is in the Yardi budget that Carlos actually has printed out for you instead of the roll-up, you actually have the development activities consist of multiple properties. You've got at least, 10, if not more than that, because we also have LLPs that we created in anticipation of being able to do tax credits that we had, but they still have costs associated with them. So I can print it as a roll up of development activities, but have it by month, or you can actually see it as all the properties that make up development activities inside of that, because Yardi allows us to do it both ways, and that's when you would look at Magnolia Point and you can see what the actual fees. But right now, all of this is it's rolled up, so I couldn't tell you exactly. I couldn't pinpoint that fee without going back and pulling up.
You don't need to do all of those properties.
Okay.
Okay. Is there something else to look at?
Bedtime reading. Okay, fine. Any other things that need to be brought to our attention?
The public hearing for the agency plan, we get our 45-day period tomorrow. So at 6 o'clock, we'll actually have Commissioner Pimentel be here to listen to public comments. And then that'll close the process and give us from that time until October 15th to get all the changes.
All right. So no further business to come before us. Officially adjourn the meeting at 3:40. Thank you so much.
Thank you for coming. Thank you for letting us move your car
for
the movie.
No, that's all right. I don't want to stop talking. That's part of the reduction plan.
Thank you, then.
We can say we participated.